Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast. We are getting closer to opening day. The Milwaukee Brewers still hard at work out in Arizona. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. After my conversation with Tom, I have an interview with Jason Gerwin. He's with The Streamable. He has a lot of knowledge about the streaming business, streaming television, and that's significant for Brewers fans this year who are unable to see Fox Sports Wisconsin. It'll be known as Bally Sports Wisconsin before the start of the baseball season, but unable to see Brewers games on services like YouTube TV or Hulu Live Plus TV, some of these streaming services, Sling TV, that no longer carry the channel, most of them haven't since October. So we talk about that situation a little bit too. I know a lot of Brewers fans have been talking about it. I wrote about it at jsonline.com. So stick around for that interview as well. A lot of detail there that will be interesting to Brewers fans as it relates to viewing options. And on the other line, of course, is Tom Hovdrecourt. He is in Phoenix watching the Brewers as they hit the home stretch here. April 1st is right around the corner. The Brewers have some roster decisions to make, but for the most part, we kind of know who's going to be on this team, Tom. And you wrote about this at jsonline.com, really sort of mapping out the roster. And we've talked about it a little bit before, but your story kind of crystallized for me. There aren't a lot of major, you know, battles here for roster spots. You could maybe say a bullpen guy. There's a bullpen spot still to be had, but a lot of guys with options there. So there's really no urgency in the bullpen. You know, somebody's going to go down and it'll be back up in a couple days. We talked about the pitching anyway is going to be kind of a carousel. A lot of guys going up and down all year. But the last position player spot is kind of interesting. Billy McKinney doesn't have options. There's a couple other outfielders in the mix there. Daniel Vogelbach doesn't have options, and with no DH yet, he might be the odd man out. How do you see it right now as we talk about this, you know, March 22nd? How do you see that last spot shaping up for the Brewers?
Well, the key will be how many position players and pitchers they decide to open with. And, you know, we've assumed it's going to be 13-13, but you have to wonder, with some off days coming up right out of the chute, you know, crazily they play on a Thursday and then are off on a Friday. God knows you wouldn't want a baseball game on TV on a Friday night. They've done weird things in the past. Remember the year they kept G-Man Choi for one day and then sent him out the next? So, you know, the way McKinney and Vogelbach, the power they bring from the left side and just the things that they would be allowed to do them, we have started to wonder if maybe they'll do some trickery with their roster where they would keep both those guys and then wait a few days and then send one of them through waivers, because a player's more likely to be claimed when teams are crystallizing their rosters at the end of camp than 2 or 3 days into the season. In other words, would a team punt a player that they put on their opening roster after 2 or 3 days to claim a guy off waivers from the Brewers? Less likely, you know, once the season has started than right at the very end. There's a lot of jockeying going on. And plus, you know, under Stearns, it's not out of the realm of possibility they'll do an outside move, too.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So, but if they do go 13-13, as I wrote in my roster story, it's got to be McKinney or Vogelbach. It can't be both. Just for people, you know, that aren't that up on the Brewers, you know, you go around the field, you got Hira at first, you got Wong at second, and now it looks like the foursome of Arcia, Urias, Travis Shaw, and Daniel Robinson will be in some type of rotation at third base and shortstop. And maybe it's a thing where if a guy gets really hot, then he just takes over from the other guy. But that's kind of the way it's looking now. And then, of course, you've got four really good outfielders: Yelich, Kane, Garcia, and Jackie Bradley Jr., 4-3. And that's why you don't really need a fifth outfielder. You know, you could, because Daniel Robertson could be the fifth outfielder. He's an infielder outfielder. Just depends what they want to do. You know, McKinney's playing good in camp. They really like Vogelbach's power. The DH thing, you know, MLB will make their decision for him if they all of a sudden come out of the blue and say, we are having the DH before opening day. And people will say, wow, you know, if they haven't done it by now, they're not going to do it. Well, did you just meet MLB if you say that? because I think they did it 2 days before the season started last year. They put the DH in. So I think I've said it on this podcast. I've certainly said it to many people. I believe there's no DH when on April 1st the lineups come out and there's no DH. That's when I'll believe it.
Yeah, I feel the same way, definitely.
Yeah, and so, but that's just the way the position players. Will it be 14? Will it be 13? Will there be a DH? Will there be no DH? You know, do they feel comfortable trying to get guys through waivers? Probably not. That's the stuff that's in play there. Would they make an outside move, which would make a lot of the stuff we just talked about moot? will they trade some guys? You know, say they don't think they can keep McKinney and Vogelbach, but there's interest, trade interest in one or both of them, then trade them and get something else you can use, you know what? Prospect or something. So it's going to be interesting. And the number of pitchers is going to just vary all season long. I wrote this, it's on JS on right now, my story about the rotation. So Council basically, if you read between the lines, and you don't really, if you just read the lines, you don't have to really read between them. You understand that it's going to be Woodruff, Burns, Hauser, and Anderson is the first four guys, and that's exactly the way they're lined up now. Then, you know, they like doing long divisions, so or even short division. Then it's two into one. It's Lindblom and Peralta into one. And if you're going to call it a five-man rotation. But it's sort of looking like they're going to give Freddie another shot, even though he hasn't pitched as well as a starter. But he's a different kind of guy now because he's not just throwing fastball, curveball. He's throwing fastball, curveball, slider, changeup. He's got more weapons now. But no matter how it starts, Council made it very clear today that both Lindblom and Peralta are going to start games. And he said in April, you know, so it's not like later on, really later on. They have four off days in April, two in the first 9 days. You know, they don't really need more than five starters in. But then there's a, after their fourth off day, I think I counted today, they play 17 in a row and like 23 out of 24 days. So that's when you might see him use a sixth guy. They're going to be so careful with piling up innings early on these guys' arms after they only played 60 games. They're really going to be careful about that. And then the bullpen, as you noted in the intro, they had all kinds of guys with options, Topa, Rasmussen, Fire Eisen. You're just going to see those guys going back and forth, you know, from the alternate training site to Milwaukee. We're going to see a lot of that. The only guys that you know are going to just be definitely in the bullpen, you know, whoever the Peralta Lindblom guy that isn't the starter, the other one will be in the bullpen. And then Hader and Devin Williams and Brent Suter. And then I think Boxberger is probably a guy they want to keep, but, you know, I wouldn't bet my house on it right now. And then all those other guys are just going to go back and forth. I don't think I've left anybody out. I'm looking at my notes here. Did I leave an obvious reliever out when I was I did. I did leave an obvious one out, Eric Yardley.
Sure.
He's going to be on the team. So that's the only guy. And so all the others. And then I think we're going to see Bickford and Perdomo at various points, too. Perdomo is such an interesting guy, 6'8" lefty. He reminds me a little bit of Amir Garrett with the Reds, who's really turned into a stud in their bullpen. When he throws strikes, hitters are in trouble. They don't really hit him very well either. You know, if he doesn't walk him, he usually gets him out and quite often strikes him out. So they have a lot. And all those guys are going to pitch for him this year and then maybe some more too. You know, it's going to be a year where a lot of guys get to pitch.
You know, I have to admit, I kind of had not thought of Freddie Peralta as a starter because you mentioned he and Lindblom, one of them will start, they'll both start at points during the year, but you know, we don't know who's going to open the year, I guess, as a quote unquote starter or fifth starter with all those off days. There may not even be a fifth starter for a while, but I kind of just have assigned him in my head as a reliever who can go multiple innings. And even with the enhanced arsenal, that would seem to be a good fit for him, but going three innings, two, three, four innings, whatever's needed. And he's had so much success in that role. I guess I'm surprised that they're still committed to trying to work out the starter thing, since he hasn't had the same level of success as he's had as one of those sort of, you know, dynamic relievers. And Josh Lindblom, of course, was pretty effective, decently effective as a starter last year. Does it surprise you that they keep going back to that well, or is it? I might be talking in absolutes that the Brewers just do not think. They do not even care who's starter, who's reliever, or whatever. They're really just like filling holes, like Craig Counsell says, with his outgetters.
Right. I mean, and that they blur the lines there. But, you know, as I noted earlier, he's not the same guy that he used to be. He used to be fastball, because his nickname is Fastball Freddy.
Yeah.
He used to be fastball and with the occasional curveball. Now he's fastball with curveball, sliders, and even some changeups. So he's got a different repertoire, too. Don't forget they signed him to a 5-year contract last year, too. Very surprisingly, you know, buying out all of his arbitration and up to free agency. And it wasn't for like buku dollars, but still, I think like $15 million or so after one plus year of service. So, and he's 24. So, you know, you generally don't sign a guy for 5 years if you're just going to say, well, he's going to be a reliever, you know?
Right.
So I think they want to give him a chance. And just think, if he does convert successfully to starting, you know, then you got Woodruff, Burns, Hauser, and Freddie, and then you just need a fifth guy for quite a few years. You know, so and the thing is, if he makes a couple of starts and he doesn't look that good, then boom, Lindblom in, Freddie to the bullpen. You know, he's going to be multi-inning no matter what. Suter, the same thing. You know, and I think we've talked about this on the podcast before. They really look at games like math equations. How many arms do we have to divide into 27 outs to win tonight's game? That's kind of the way they look at it.
Yeah. And one last note with the starting rotation. We know now Brandon Woodruff, as fully expected, will be the opening day starter for the Brewers April 1st against the Minnesota Twins. That's going to put to rest one of our favorite things to talk about, the opening day curse for the Brewers. I don't know if 2020 doesn't quite count because it was so weird, but I mean, this is it. Brandon Woodruff is a multi-year opening day starter, and nothing has befallen him yet, right?
You know, he's the first guy to pitch back-to-back since Gallardo did it 5 straight years from 2010 to 2014. And then, you know, the 5 guys that followed that all went into the Bermuda Triangle never to be seen again. You know, it started with Kyle Loesch. He was on the 3rd year of a contract. He had a brutal year. He was shifted to the bullpen. And then after that, he only pitched 2 more games in the major leagues. Before he was done. Then the next year, Willie Peralta, you know, he won 17 games 1 year. And then, so they really thought he was going to be a foundation piece in the rotation. He flamed out, got dumped. Junior Guerra, who didn't make it out of the game in 2017, on a successful sacrifice bunt, he slipped coming out of the box and strained a calf and missed 6 weeks. He ended up being a relief pitcher. At least, you know, he didn't, like, disappear. He did become a very good relief pitcher a couple of years later, but not so much starting. Chase Anderson, you know, in 2018, he had some injury problems. They took him out. He led the league in home runs surrendered that year, 30. Got taken out of the rotation down the stretch when they were chasing down the Cubs. And then, you know, one of the more remarkable both ends of the spectrum guys in recent Brewers history, Yoelis Chacin.
Mm-hmm.
He was their best pitcher in 2018 and their worst pitcher in 2019.
It was weird.
Got released. He didn't just lose his starting job. He got released before the season was out. How many opening day starters are released in that season?
Well, I keep coming back to Jeremy Jeffress also gets released that year. I mean, their bullpen, their main guys all fell apart. I still am blown away that that team made the playoffs. You know, like, they had Travis Shaw fell off a cliff. Like, they had so many things work against them. Obviously, Keston Hira shows up. There are things working for them too. But that's a crazy year. 2019 is wild. I'm still scratching my head how the Brewers put that together.
And they should have beat the team that won the World Series.
They absolutely should have. Absolutely. And of course, the guy who makes the error there, Trent Grisham, now having a nice, you know, a great year last year with San Diego. And it's just, it seems like everything kind of went wrong, and yet they, you know, they were in a great spot in 2019 and have now made three playoff runs in a row. We have seen now in spring training for the first time, Devin Williams and Lorenzo Cain, a couple guys who've been sort of nursing themselves back to health. I know you said on the last time we talked, it was a little concerning with Devin Williams because he has to get a workload up before he can, you know, be ready for opening day. And certainly that's true with Lorenzo Cain too, although the Brewers are really well covered there with Jackie Bradley Jr. being part of the outfield equation now too. You could easily play him in center and let Lorenzo Cain get healthy perhaps through the first week of the season. It doesn't look like either one of those guys at this point will start the year on the injured list, but I don't know. Is that too optimistic? Do you still think they're sort of not out of the woods when it comes to getting ready for opening day?
Well, I don't think they're out of the woods, but and let's put it this way. If they do make it to opening day in one piece, both of them, they're going to have to be eased into the season. Lorenzo Cain, they've got starting last night, they had 11 games left. There's no way he's playing more than five or six of them. You know, so they're going to have to ease him in. But like you said, they got the ultimate security blanket in Jackie Bradley Jr. And then Devin Williams, I asked counsel this morning if they would even think of using him back-to-back during spring training. Because usually every relief pitcher does one back-to-back. Because how can you ask him to do it during the season if you don't ask him to do it in spring training? But he said they would not test that axiom. This year that they would not use Williams back-to-back in spring training. So he's not going to be built up, and they'll just have to ease him in, you know. But he did throw the ball pretty good last night. Old friend Mike Moustakas, you know, put a 10-pitch at bat on him and eventually walked. One interesting thing about Williams last night is he threw some sliders. It's like Freddie Peralta showing up with a slider. You know, we haven't seen sliders from Devin Williams. We've seen fastballs and changeups. And I tell you, I want that one good sign. Supposedly his arm felt okay this morning. He touched 98 and sat at 96-97. So you usually can't pitch to that velo with your arm sore.
Right. Yeah, that's an encouraging sign that Brewers bullpen should still be one of the strengths of the team. And certainly those guys, you know, Williams will be a big part of it, as we know. A couple guys I want to get your take on. A couple guys who I don't think, I'm pretty sure are not going to make the opening day roster. I'm very sure in Eric Lauer's case, because I know that the team has already sort of sent him down the paperwork part of that, since guys aren't exactly leaving. He'll be at the alternate site to start with. But Eric Lauer has struggled a little bit, certainly last year and in spring training this year. Part of that big deal with San Diego, speaking of Trent Grisham, to bring both Eric Lauer and Luis Urias to the Brewers. It sounds like he was a little bit more dinged up last year than anybody knew, so that might have contributed to his struggles last year. But I'm sure the Brewers are kind of hoping to see him start to put some results on, you know, put some results on tape as well. And then Jordan Zimmermann, the Wisconsin native, who a longtime veteran in the big leagues, he has also struggled in spring training as well. He's not going to make the opening day roster, but wonder if the team would try to keep him around, try to rediscover some of that magic from a veteran guy who might want to stick around just because this is his home state team. But I don't know. Give me your impressions on both of those guys.
Well, Lauer needs to pitch, and he needs to pitch in the minor leagues and get himself squared away. I mean, we haven't seen, the real Eric Lauer. He was a pretty steady pitcher for the Padres for a couple of years. Not fantastic, but pretty steady. We haven't seen that guy yet. And some of them has been because of injuries. But we have to, see what he can do once he's right. I mean, we just haven't seen that yet. So he's just got to go pitch. And it's too bad that the minor league seasons were delayed a month, because the only pitching he'll be able to do now in April is at the alternate training site, and you usually get, a little better gauge when they're facing guys in other uniforms. But, it is what it is. But, they expect him to be back at some point this year and be on their team. So we'll see. Jordan Zimmermann's a little more complicated, because I think this is going to have to be a mutual decision. They've probably already indicated to him that he's not going to be on the team. He has an out clause coming, and you know, I think 4 or 5 days before opening day. If they tell him they have interest in keeping him, but he won't make the opening day roster, he's going to have to ask himself at his age and with his money that he's already made and so on and so forth, do I want to go to Appleton and stay ready to pitch, or do I just want to go home? You know, is it so? That's going to be something that has to be decided on both ends. I think the Brewers would like to keep him around and see if he can come around. He has looked better the last few times out. They went really slow with him. But the question is, will he want to do it that way? You know, because I don't see him being on the opening roster. And so that's going to be interesting to see what happens. He'll have a lot of say in it. And I got a feeling, you know, they'll just lay it out for him and say, what do you want to do? And then we're either going to see him go to Appleton or just say that I think this is enough, you know. So that's kind of the read I got on that, to be determined. But I do think they, you know, they would have cut him by now if they didn't want to try to keep him in some form.
Absolutely right. Since we last chatted, Ryan Braun swung by the facility there and said hi to some people. There's obviously no spot for him on this team. The Brewers now with four, you know, big league outfielders for three spots, and we talked about the fifth outfield situation. Like, Ryan Braun's not going to be on this team, at least to start with. But I was surprised to hear him say that the only team he would play for, it seemed like, I'm paraphrasing, seemed like he would just say the only reason he'd come back would be to play for the Brewers. I thought maybe he was just sort of waiting out spring training, you know, veteran move, and then he'd sign with a team late in spring training and, you know, get a quick invite, make him opening day roster. But now I have no idea. Like, I mean, I don't see any way that the Brewers have him back. You've known him for years. Do you have any speculation as to what Ryan Braun's going to do? I mean, he's left the door open, but man, I'm really confused.
Yeah, I don't think he knows yet for sure. I think he's fairly certain that he's done, but I think he'd kind of like to see what happens in the world and, you know, with the Brewers. So he's keeping the door open, but it's cracked. You know, it's not like a jar. It's a crack. He's got the door cracked. And so, you know, he has the right to not announce his retirement till he wants to announce his retirement, right? He doesn't have to file, you know, he has the right to weigh down. And the world is different now. And I don't think he really wanted JR to go out the way he went out.
No, but, of course not.
You know, he might just have to eventually come to terms with that. At the very least, they would certainly bring him back and, you know, have some type of farewell if he decides not to play anymore, with fans in the stands, no matter what capacity, right? You know, that was tough if that was the last year he played. But he didn't know to us. And there, you know, he drops a lot of hints to us that he's done. And one of them was he said it beat not playing at all last year. And also he was happy to be on the only Brewer team ever to go to the playoffs three straight years. So he drops a lot of hints that he's probably done. I tell you what, they missed a chance for one of the greatest gags ever if they would have put a Brewers uniform on him and let him walk out onto the field and, like, put a camera on him. Oh, my goodness. What can you imagine people back home?
Oh, yeah. Brewers Twitter would have been on fire. That would have been amazing.
I mean, just when I tweeted that he was on the premises, smoke started, you know, coming out of Twitter, you know, oh, he's coming back, you know. And so the people didn't think, you know, he would just come and visit. But yeah. That's my take on it. I think it's way more. Well, and I think I've said this on the podcast before, too, JR. The longer he goes without playing, the less likely he is to come back.
Right.
Do you see Ryan Braun going on a 4-week minor league rehab to get ready to play?
No.
I don't.
Yeah, no. And if he's not going to play this year, he's not going to just reemerge, you know, when there are fans fully in the stands. That would be it.
No. So, you know, this
This goes under the 99% sure, but you got to leave the 1% out there, right?
Yes, if only for fan intrigue. But yes, that's still a story. It's still out there. Before I let you go, you mentioned at the very beginning here the G-Man Choi example back in 2018. And if I recall correctly, that was to add Dan Jennings, a guy from an outside organization, to get a left-handed reliever in there. Is there anything that this team lacks that they might make a move for that they would particularly target to bring into this team right before they break camp? Or do you think, I mean, to me, it seems like it's pretty set, but maybe there's something, maybe it's speed or a certain position that they might want that little extra shot of depth at. Like, do you think there's something particular they might look for?
I think if like an experienced bullpen arm became available in any way, they would be intrigued. Because remember, we just talked about all those guys with options.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you pick up an experienced bullpen guy out of options, then you just, you know, you have the flexibilities for some of those other guys to open, you know, in Appleton. So, and don't forget, it's going to be all about the pitching this year. So, but that's it. I mean, where else would they make a move? You know, I think they really like their team, you know, their options. And, you know, I don't know if I've covered a Brewers team. You know, we're not going to include last year because it's just so bogus with 60 games. But facing a 162, I don't know if I've covered a team with as wide a range of possibilities as this one has. Because suppose all the guys on the team hit like they did last year, but over 162. It's not going to be pretty. But almost all of them hit worse than they had ever hit before. So say they just come back to normal. And I'm not saying crazy all-star, you know, elite. I'm talking about their normal goodness. You know what? Suppose they do that. Suppose a lot of them do that. They could be really good. You know, so, and I talked to a lot of scouts who tell me the same thing, that the Brewers, if there's one team that might be way better, at the end than they were projected at the beginning, it's them. For all of those reasons I just said, they have so many guys that are capable of doing so much more than they did last year. And I'm talking mostly offensively. They pitched really well last year.
Yeah.
But a lot of people like their pitching too. You know, how do you not like pitching that starts with Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burns and ends with Devin Williams and Josh Hader?
Right. And that goes back to what we're talking about. I mean, Josh Lindblom is a guy who might not have a spot in the rotation. That's a pretty credible arm, you know, a long-term, a three-year contract guy who deserves it. You know, like that's great depth.
Yeah, I covered Brewers teams where he would have been the opening day starter, no question.
Absolutely, yeah.
Instead of Rafael Roque.
Oh, Rafael Roque, the great example of an opening day starter. You mentioned a few of them, but oh man. Every time we talk about Brewers opening day starter, the name Rafael Roque does go through my head. It's wild. All right, Tom. Well, thanks for joining us. Before any last thoughts? Any other thing you're following, player you've noticed, or anything else before I let you go?
I don't think so. Well, Garrett Mitchell.
Oh my gosh. 10 of 20. The dude's unbelievable.
He's now tied for the team lead in hits with about a third of the plate appearances as, you know, I mean, you know, Craig Counsell made such a good comment on how really astounding it is for him to be 10 to 20. He said because he starts the game on the bench and then comes in the second half, it's almost always like as a pinch hitter. So he's not 10 for 20 with four at-bats a game over five games. You know, he's 10 for 20 getting one or at the most two at-bats every now and then. And also, six of the 10 at-bats against lefties, and he's a left-handed hitter. The bottom line on him is they looks like they got something with him, you know?
Yeah.
And he's not intimidated, and he's just going to be the better for it. And thank God they brought him to camp because he didn't play any professional baseball last year. It would have been real easy to say this would be putting him in over his head. And now I think they have the utmost confidence that rookie ball doesn't start to June. Big deal. This kid don't got to go to rookie ball. Let's send him to A ball, you know, and we might see him up the road in Appleton.
Yeah, I am very curious to know what happens next to him. I mean, 20 at bats or, you know, that's not a big sample at all, but certainly acquitted himself well, and I agree. He's gonna move up the chain very aggressively now that they know what they have with him. So, pretty exciting stuff for
he should be ready to play center in the buildings right about the time Kane and Bradley are gone.
There you go. So. Yep, it's gonna fit in pretty nicely. College kids, so he's the learning curve isn't a big one.
Great kid too. Great kid. We love talking to him. Great kid. Just does and says all the right things. Everything good. You know, he knows people passed on him because of his type 1 diabetes. So he's always got a little chip on his shoulder about that. So, and I mean, he can really do just about everything. So just one, that's my guy. You know, how often do I say the guy I want to talk about? I know for a fact he's not going to be on the team.
Maybe in 2021, but in the future, it's for an organization that doesn't have many stud prospects, at least, according to the prospect list. It's nice to have a big name at the top. He is Tom Hodricourt. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. He's in Arizona for a little while longer, but another 10 days, the Milwaukee Brewers will be opening up American Family Field against the Minnesota Twins on April 1st. Have a couple roster decisions to make before that. Check all that information out at jsonline.com. Thanks for joining us, Tom. We will chat again very soon.
Thanks, JR.
Now my interview with Jason Gerwin, co-founder of The Streamable. It's a website that it's actually a pretty cool place. You can get information about where to stream anything, a movie, a TV show. It tells you what services have it where you have to pay for it. You can put in a bunch of preferences, and it tells you what services that you might like. Maybe you'd like Hulu. Maybe you'd like, you know, I don't know who doesn't have Netflix. Maybe it's Netflix. Maybe it's a cable package or whatever. But more than that, the site also follows a lot of what's going on in streaming television in general. And a lot of Milwaukee Brewers fans are a little bummed out this year because they don't have access in their homes to Fox Sports Wisconsin. It's going to be called Bally Sports Wisconsin as of the start of the baseball season. I believe either March 31st to April 1st, it'll go through a rebrand. It's owned. Fox Sports Wisconsin channels are part of a regional group of channels. I shouldn't say regional group, but they're known as the regional sports networks. They're all over the country. It's very similar networks to Fox Sports Wisconsin, primarily carrying local sports. You know, the Wisconsin obviously carries the Bucks and the Brewers and a few other shoulder programming offerings that relate to Wisconsin sports. They are owned right now by Sinclair. Originally, of course, they were affiliated with Fox, hence Fox Sports Wisconsin, but that hasn't been the case for a couple of years that they've had an affiliation with Fox. They were spun off as part of the Disney Fox merger, sold to Sinclair, part of the whole deal. And since then, Sinclair has been slowly getting around to a rebrand. They're partnering with Bally's, the casino to offer Bally Sports Wisconsin. But in the process, a lot of these channels have been dropped from streaming services. The economics just aren't working out. And Jason Gerwin's going to explain why that is, what sort of standing in the way from those to be, because they used to be. Fox Sports Wisconsin used to be on these streaming services. So what gives? What happened to them? And who's sort of driving the bus on that? You know, what's going to happen in the future? Are we going to get a new service, an over-the-top offering from Bally Sports Wisconsin that lets people watch Brewers games for maybe a fee and not have to order a pricey cable package like with Spectrum or AT&T or with DirecTV. Those are right now kind of the only options for people who want to watch Brewers games. And I know that's frustrating to a lot of fans. So again, I did write about this at jsonline.com. You can find it if you don't want to listen to the podcast, but you've made it this far. You might as well. Jason has a lot of good detail about what's happening behind the scenes there. So here he is, Jason Gerwin of The Streamable. My guest is Jason Gerwin. He is co-founder of TheStreamable.com, and he knows a lot about what's going on with this RSN situation with streaming services. A lot of Bucks fans have noticed that they do not have access to regular Bucks games, the ones that are not on national TV. And starting April 1st, Brewers fans are going to notice the same thing. Brewers games, by and large, are not going to be available without a cable subscription, without a Spectrum or AT&T subscription. And I know a lot of people are unhappy about that. Jason, you follow this stuff very closely, and I'll ask you a question that most readers and consumers just want to know right off the top. Is there any hope for 2021 that Milwaukee Brewers fans are going to be able to watch their team if they have Hulu Plus Live TV or YouTube Plus or really any other streaming service that isn't, you know, one of the big time cable options?
So the bad news is that it is very, very unlikely that Fox Sports Wisconsin is coming back to Hulu Live TV or YouTube TV anytime soon. Sinclair's CEO, Chris Ripley, was asked about this on an earnings call, and he kind of hemmed and hawed around you know, giving a straightforward answer, which you know, in my opinion, means that they haven't made a lot of progress. And to be honest, you know, from a financial standpoint, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for Hulu Live and YouTube TV to add back the regional sports networks. The good news is there is still one option, and AT&T TV recently launched new no contract plan. So historically, they had a service, AT&T DirecTV Now, then AT&T TV Now AT&T TV. But when AT&T TV first launched, you still needed a contract. But these no contract plans, while they're not cheap, they're $84.99 a month, you can get Fox Sports Wisconsin. So it still has the benefits that you get from a YouTube TV and a Hulu Live, and that you can cancel at any time. So it's month to month. So if you're a Brewers fan, you can just keep it for, you know, the 6 to 7 months of the baseball season. It has an unlimited DVR, which they just added, and you can stream it on as many devices in your home as you want. So for someone who has a big family and you're used to paying that $8 a month set-top box fee from your cable company, that's one fee you're not going to have to pay with this service. You can have, you know, five TVs and you're still paying that same $84.99 a month.
Cool. Well, at least there's something. What changed here? Like these services started disappearing from, you know, from streaming services, you know, really even back in 2019, I think, when Sling and Dish dropped them. And then in January, Fubo lost the Fox Sports Wisconsin and the other RSNs, YouTube and Hulu last fall. And I think Brewers fans maybe didn't even notice, because that kicked in October. Baseball season had just ended. So there may be a lot of consumers who aren't even coming around to this until, you know, April 1st starts up and they fire up their service and there's no Fox Sports Wisconsin for them. What are the stumbling blocks that cause these to fall away from streaming services?
So it ultimately comes down to economics. I think when these services first launched, they were 35, 40, 45 bucks a month. They had a lot of channels, RSNs, but all of these companies were losing $15 to $20 a month per subscriber, and it just wasn't sustainable. And if you look at the economics of a regional sports network, a very small percentage of viewers of a streaming TV package, like a YouTube TV, are actually watching an RSN. So, you know, 5 to 10% of subscribers. So ultimately, the 90% of subscribers who don't watch it are subsidizing that 10% of subscribers that do. And given that an RSN is one of the most expensive channels in a cable bundle, it's just not sustainable for these packages that, even at a more expensive $65 a month, are more or less breaking even on the carriage fees that they pay to carry all the channels in the bundle.
Dang. So I'm guessing too, sports in general, there's a lot of production costs. So I'm guessing that adds to the equation too. Maybe I don't know quite where necessarily, but is there kind of a bad guy here? Is there somebody to blame, or is this just sort of the nature of the beast? Sports are too expensive for these services, especially if what you're saying, only 10% of people are watching that content. That doesn't make any financial sense. I don't know if Sinclair could give on this, or the streaming services could give. Like, it seems like it's kind of a situation they can't really solve. I don't know. What would you say to that?
It's kind of like a house of cards, right? Like it's hard to point blame at one individual, you know, person, right? Like, let's take the Brewers, for example. The Brewers had one of the lowest rights fees deals in the entire, you know, sports industry. They were getting somewhere in the neighborhood of $20 to $25 million a year. Their latest deal, they haven't disclosed exactly how much it's worth, but let's say it jumped up to $40 million, you know, a year. When those rights fees go up, all of these RSNs go and try to charge a higher fee to cable providers and streaming providers. And as a result, they have more costs, which then they have to raise costs to consumers. And when they raise costs to consumers, consumers drop the services, right? And then you end up in this kind of circle where, you know, you can't keep raising the amount you're paying to the teams and not have someone like Sinclair keep raising the price and not have the cable companies keep raising the price. So it's kind of like that long term, there has to be a new model for this to be sustainable, you know, going forward.
My understanding is teams don't have a lot of leverage here. That the Brewers did just sign, like you mentioned, this multi-year deal to stay with Fox Sports Wisconsin, which will soon be Bally Sports Wisconsin. We'll talk about that too. But I don't know what other options they would have had. Like, I'm sure it's not a big enough piece of the puzzle for them to have gone, you know, played hardball and said, we don't want to work with you unless you're going to reach out to our streaming subscribers. And furthermore, like, just the way the market is, I don't know if there's another provider anywhere. Like, I don't know what plan B could have been for a team like the Brewers. And I know that the Bucks, they can't really, it doesn't seem like they have a lot of leverage to dictate, we want this to happen, right?
Yeah, so ultimately, the Brewers in that market, there wasn't another regional sports network that they could have done. You know, 5 or 10 years ago, what a lot of teams did as their leverage is they went and found another company to partner with to launch their own regional sports network where they have equity in the business. So like this happened in Houston, and it ended up being a terrible mess. And that sports network ended up, regional sports network ended up bankrupt. Right. So, you know, for now, really, the option was to either re-up with Sinclair, or they could have theoretically tried to do a direct to consumer business where, you know, the Brewers partner with the Bucks and maybe get the rights to the Wild and do their own thing. But the economics of that are challenging as well.
And speaking of just direct to consumer service, there is at least some thought that that's what Fox Sports Wisconsin, or what will now be Bally Sports Wisconsin, is going to try to do. You know, hearing from them, it sounds like they don't even plan on that until 2022 at the earliest. And I know there are a lot of challenges to threading that needle as well for people who are hoping for there to be a Bally Sports Wisconsin app. What are sort of the things in the way from that happening?
So the Bally Sports Wisconsin app is going to come in two parts. So just before the start of the regular season, they're going to be launching a new app, which is for cable subscribers and those who have access to Bally Sports Wisconsin via AT&T TV. So it will require TV Everywhere authentication. There was hope that at some point this year, there would be a direct-to-consumer product, but Sinclair has said that's not coming until some point in 2022. The thing that, you know, still is uncertain is what that direct-to-consumer product could be. Is it going to have live games? Is it just going to have the shoulder programming around live games? Is it going to be a subset of games? I don't know. The clarity around that isn't super clear, and how they would actually make that work financially isn't clear either. Like, if we just look at the numbers, you know, the Wisconsin kind of broader area for Brewers games, about 60,000 people watch the Brewers on average. Like, if you actually look at the economics, again, let's say they have $35 to $40 million rights fee per year. They're getting paid, or Sinclair is paying, you know, the Brewers. You would need 60,000 people to pay $50 a month for the entire year to just cover those rights fees, right? For a single channel. Yeah, people are already, you know, talking that it's too expensive at $65 a month for an entire bundle of cable channels. You know, the one thing, and we can talk about, you know, Bally's and how they come into it. You know, I'm a really big believer that this Bally's deal may be the secret sauce to make a direct-to-consumer product work. You know, sports betting is something that is, you know, gaining steam nationally. It's available in some states, and it could be the way that these direct-to-consumer products get subsidized. If they need to charge the consumer $50 a month, if you spend $100 in sports betting, you know, every month, maybe they give you $30 off that subscription, and then they can make it, you know, $19.99 a month for people who are gambling. So there is a way to make it work, but it's certainly not going to be as simple as a Disney Plus that's just, here's a low fee, go get your Brewers game.
Yeah, and of course, online betting in the state of Wisconsin is
not something that may happen for a long time. So that also would be a wrinkle in it in terms of Wisconsin consumers. What do you, from what you know about the rebrand as Bally Sports Wisconsin, do you envision it looking differently, particularly for the sports broadcast? I mean, baseball broadcasts will be what they are, but how different do you think the viewer experience is going to be for people who do have access to Brewers games?
I think the viewing experience will, on the actual telecast, I don't think I would expect the telecast to be that different outside of the graphics packages, the sports, the score bug. Obviously that's going to have very heavy Bally's branding around it versus the Fox Sports, you know, graphics that you've seen in the past. I think you'll also see more of a sports betting component, whether, you know, even though it's not legal in Wisconsin, you know, I think you'll start seeing that more layered in around odds and maybe some free to play type things. Like, what do you think will happen in this at bat, you know, and add those into their app, because that's kind of the bridge. If they can get people engaged in the game using, you know, free to play, you can ultimately get people to start spending money when it does become legal.
So mentioning how expensive sports are to produce and obviously rights fees and stuff, is this going to happen with other channels as well? Like, forget the RSNs for a second, where they start falling off of these streaming services because the price point gets so high that streaming services wind up charging as much as cable does. I mean, is the streaming service platform in general, is that also a house of cards, or is that sustainable as long as it's, you know, heavily curated?
So it's a lot harder to do with other channels. Like, let's take ESPN, for instance.
Sure. It's
the most expensive channel in the bundle. But what's happened over the last couple of years is there's been, you know, mergers between different content companies, you know, Viacom and CBS. So
right.
If I'm a digital MVPD or one of these streaming services like YouTube TV, before I could go make a deal with Viacom or CBS, so my bundle could stay small. But now that they're one company, I either have to carry all their channels or none of their channels. Right. In the case of ESPN, I can't just go and say, hey, I just want ESPN. I have to take ESPN, I have to take Disney Channel, I have to take the national feeds of ABC, I have to take ACC Network, SEC Network. I have to take the entire package from that company. So, like, you know, you have seen this in some places. For instance, FuboTV last year made the decision, we're not going to carry Warner Media channels anymore, so TNT and TBS, right? But in that place, they said, we think we'll get better bang for our buck for our consumers by carrying all Disney-owned channels. So they didn't have ESPN, now they do, and now they no longer have TNT and TBS. So I think that is the one thing you might see. You might see channels in the bundle that drop off because they just decide strategically having certain channels are in there. But, you know, as we've seen prices increase on these, you've also seen these skinny bundles become fatter and fatter and fatter. When they were the $35 to $40 price points, they had about 20 to 25 of the top 35 cable channels. And now they all have anywhere from 31 to 34 of the top 35 cable channels. So the price has gone up, but the bundles have also, you know, included a lot more outside of these RSNs.
Right. Before I let you go, I want you to tell me a little bit about what streamable.com does, and if there's any last things that Brewers fans need to know before they venture out there to try to figure out how they're going to watch these games.
For sure. So the Streamable at thestreamable.com, you can go and find the best way to stream anything online, from, you know, your favorite sports teams like the Brewers and the Bucks, to looking up where a movie or a TV show is streaming. If you're a huge fan of The Big Bang Theory, you can put it in and we'll tell you across 50 different streaming services where it's available. And as shows and movies switch every month, you can keep on coming back to see where a show or movie is. We also have a really cool tool called the Matchmaker, where you can add your favorite sports teams, your favorite channels, and we'll make a recommendation for the best streaming service for you. So you don't need to go across all the sites and compare. We'll do that work for you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jason Gerwin, co-founder of The Streamable. Appreciate the time, and I wish the news were better for Brewers fans, but I guess that's just the climate we're in. Gotta forge through it.
For sure. Thank you.